roll call be dispensed with. Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The sergeant is instructed to bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is the Reverend Rachel McIver-Morey from Brooklyn Mosaic United Methodist Church in Brooklyn Center. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
We pray for the strength to listen to what others have to say with more empathy than cynicism. We pray for the clarity to know when to stand, when to sit, and when to kneel. We pray for the wisdom to walk away when needed. We pray for the patience to grind it out when needed. We pray for each other, knowing that each one here brings his or her own life, work, experience, and troubles to the floor today. We honor the sacrifice visited upon the families and loved ones of those who serve in this chamber. We pray for this legislative session and the decisions that we will all have to live with at its end. May they be worthy of the calling and gifts of the people of this state. Finally, we pray that on this April Fool's Day, the biggest joke of all turns out to be on those who believe us unable to address the pressing concerns of our people and unwilling to see beyond today for what tomorrow could be. And may the punchline be a state as well governed as it is well loved. Amen. Amen.
Of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, visible with liberty and justice. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Buck, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fishbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J, Peterson B, Pratt, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, Rude, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Uyghur, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move first to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the adoption by the House of the following House Concurrent Resolution herewith transmitted. House Concurrent Resolution Number 1, a House Concurrent Resolution relating to adjournment for more than 3 days.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move adoption of House Concurrent Resolution Number 1. Members, this is the joint resolution that establishes the Easter break from adjournment on April 10th until a convening time on April 22nd.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file herewith returned. Senate file number 2100, a bill for an act relating to public safety, deputy registrars, removing the residency requirement for deputy registrars. Signed, Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. And, Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. House file number 1892, a bill for an act relating to transportation, highways, designating a segment of marked trunk highway number 36 as Officer Richard Crittenden Memorial Highway. Senate file number 1892 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Uyghur.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1892 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Senator Uyghur, would you explain any differences?
Yes, Madam Chair, two differences. The reference to the Memorial Highway includes Officer Crittenden's full name, adding Richard Crittenden Sr. And the second change relates to the placement and saying that it would be directly for the signs adjacent to the marked Highway 36 roadway, excluding entrance and exit ramps. Madam President, the specific language is in House Journal March 31st, yesterday, page 8581. Our action is in the Senate Journal March 24, page 6803. The House's action was passed unanimously. I concur.
Is there any discussion on the concurrence? Then all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1892 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1892, a bill for an act relating to transportation, highways, designating a segment of marked Trunk Highway 36 as Officer Richard Crittenden Sr. Memorial Highway.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House files number 2188, 2190, 2219, 2835, and 2858. Signed, Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Fourth order of business, first reading of House bills. The bills printed on the agenda will be given their first reading and referred as indicated. Fifth order of business, reports of committee. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. The bills printed on the agenda will be given their second reading. Eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. The bills listed on today's introduction calendar are given their first reading and referred as indicated. Ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. These are author motions. They'll be taken as one vote. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate resolutions 185 to 197 will be referred to the Committee on Rules. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Bach.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills to be made special orders for immediate consideration. And members, on your desk, there's a list. Take off the last one on the list, number 57 on general orders. We're not going to deal with that today, but the others we plan to deal with.
Okay, the first bill under consideration on the special orders calendar is number 15 on general orders, Senate File 1762, Senator Johnson.
Madam President and members, Senate File 1762 is a bill that was actually from the Board of Cosmetologists. It started out being it really is an unsessioned bill, so it's correcting outdated, duplicated, and inconsistent language in their statutes. However, they also included a provision to expand the board. Presently, they have 4 members, and they would like to expand to 7 to include all of the various perspectives of cosmetology. Therefore, they will have a person who is two of the members will be cosmetologists, 2 will be school instructors, 1 esthetician, 1 nail technician, and 1 public member. And for those of you who might ask me about esthetician, that is considered to be someone who removes, deals with the skin of a client. Other than that, they're also, they established, they got rid of the provision that would a requirement for processing to licensing felons. Because the board has established a program at the Shakopee Prison and currently follows criminal rehabilitation statute, they do have a program in the Shakopee Prison for rehabilitating their clients at the prison. Members, if you have questions, I'd be happy to go through the bill section by section. Otherwise, there's been no disagreement with the provisions in this bill, and I would ask you to please support passage.
Is there any discussion? Are there any amendments? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1762 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1762, a bill for an act relating to cosmetology, making changes to the Board of Cosmetologist Examiners.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 47 ayes and 19 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 135 on general orders, Senate File 2060, Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam President. I have Senate File 2060. As you said, this is a farmers market regulations bill. This has been vetted and worked on very hard by a whole coalition of stakeholders, including the Minnesota Farmers Market Association, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, the Minnesota Department of Health. The City of Minneapolis has been integrally involved, and Farmers Union has been an active participant in trying to make this work so that our farmers markets can help our farmers find new markets for their food and products beginning in, you know, as soon as the snow melts. I don't know if that's ever going to occur, but it's supposed to soon. So anyway, I'll walk you through the bill very quickly. Section 1, Subdivision 1, there's the definitions. It defines farmers markets, and it defines food product sampling and demonstrations. That's kind of at the heart of the bill. Subdivision 2 is regarding the food sampling and demonstration exclusion. It says that the food handler licensing law does not apply to food sampling and demonstration at farmers markets or community events. Subdivision 3 requires that sampling and demonstration has to be supplied at no cost to the individual. It's sort of a way to help potential customers work with farmers to understand what the farmers are offering. Subdivision 4 is regulatory authority, and it makes sure that product sampling and demonstration have to provide information to the regulatory authority upon request to ensure proper safety. Subdivision 5 requires that these must meet certain standards required for special events and food stands under existing rules in the Department of Health. Subdivision 6 clarifies in the definition of farmers market that it does not preclude an individual farmers market association from establishing their own definition of a farmers market that is more restrictive than what we're putting in statute. So what's in statute is the floor rather than the ceiling. And Section 2 defines a seasonal temporary food stand and allows the regulatory authority to allow a temporary food stand to be in any one place for longer than 21 days. That's what's in the bill. Again, it's an agreement among several stakeholders, and I would encourage members' support. Thank you.
Is there any discussion? Are there any amendments? Senator Rudin.
Madam Chair, I have the A4 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Rood moves to amend Senate File Number 2060 as follows. Page 3 after line 4, insert, and this is the A4 amendment.
Senator Rood.
Madam Chair and members, I have the A4 amendment. You know, many of our small communities have festivals and cook-offs, and this is something that we've been working on for a long time, and we have Cross Lake Chili Days. And the history of Cross Lake Chili Days is from 1987 to 2011. We've had between 25 and 30 businesses participate in this event. It brings a lot of people into our community in September when our tourism industry is a little lagging, and so we bring a lot of people into town for this event. In 2011, we had the health department come in and tell us that we had to change our regulations and our rules. And since that time, we've been trying to work with them. Madam Chair, I don't think we can hear.
Members, please give the speaking member your courteous attention.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we've been working since 2011 on this issue, trying to work with the Minnesota Department of Health to find a solution to this, because it's a big event in our town. Many towns have this. They have little events where they have soup and they have chili, and it's kind of a tradition in our small towns in greater Minnesota. And what this bill does, it simply says that for a community event where there's no fee for the event and the food is given away, that we simply need to make sure that our food preparation volunteers have had the same food safety course that we have for churches to have that course, and that the food is served in a cup or a bowl that disclaims that the contents were
made by volunteers, and the consumers assume that risk. And so we think this is a very good solution to this problem. And again, we've been working. We've had our meeting started with the mayor of the town, the chambers of commerce, all of our business folks, and we've been really working hard on a solution. And we think that this is a good solution for this problem. Thank you. I would appreciate your support.
Madam President, I would question the germaneness under Rule 35 of this amendment. I believe this really, you know, whether you agree regarding this is a good policy or not, it is a fairly significant different purpose than what we're trying to accomplish. This is for farmers markets, for products on a farm or garden occupied and cultivated by the person selling the product. These are people that are integrally involved in growing the products, trying to find a market for their goods. It's a really important piece of what the new farm economy is working on. And this here, we have several, you know, potluck bills and things like this, and they become very controversial, and they're really a different purpose than what we're trying to accomplish here. And so I would ask that you rule this not germane under Rule 35, Madam President.
More advice, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, if we look at the rules of the Senate, non-germaneness would have to be classified as something that's not of a that's of a different subject or a significant different purpose. The bill before us talks about farmer markets, food product sampling, food product demonstrations, samples that can be given for specific sizes. This clearly is an amendment that would fit the purposes of this bill, and it would not be of a significantly different subject or purpose.
Any more advice?
Madam President, according to that interpretation, Madam President, thank you. You know, this would be all of the entire food safety chapters of law we would be open to, and that's a very broad interpretation of the rule of a different subject or a different purpose. This is a very narrow purpose we are trying to accomplish, and I believe that that well-intended as it may be, the amendment before us is not is of a substantially different purpose.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Madam President. I do not agree with the author of the bill and support the amendment as far as, you know, whether it's substantially different or not. I mean, these are chili cook-offs for nonprofits. They're selling. They're not selling. They're giving away small samples of chili. That's what they're doing. To me, it is very close to what we're talking about in the farmers market as far as being able to give away small samples under 3 ounces. It's probably similar in size to the actual amount that you're talking about giving away. But we've been trying to work on this for a number of years, Madam President, and assuming you'll rule that it is germane, I'll be able to talk about it and talk about why it's important. It does have bipartisan support as well. In our area, it's both Republicans and Democrats are saying we ought to take care of this.
Senator Rood, more advice?
Yes, Madam Chair. You know, I think when we look at the bill that we have here, the bill talks about special events and farmers markets. It talks about food safety, which is what our bill talks about. It talks about food sampling. And so all of the things in the bill, my bill analysis talks about all the things. So I think they're very similar, and I think it's very germane to this bill. Thank you.
Having listened to advice from both sides, is there any more advice? I rule that the amendment. Senator Westrom, you have advice.
Madam President, advice.
Please provide your advice.
Madam President, I just want to caution you, or I would rise in support of the amendment being debated and discussed. Some of the advice given to you was that it's controversial, could be controversial, so therefore it's not germane. Madam President, I think that is not a standard we've used whether testing germaneness, it does fit to the same subject in what we're discussing. And so I just point that out. If you heard that advice from the author of the bill, that is not a basis or a standard in which we should judge whether something is germane. Just because the author of the bill might think it or call it controversial, I don't think it means it's not germane. So I would offer you that advice. I think it should be voted on and discussed by the Senate.
More advice. Senator Lurie.
Madam President, a correction. And I in no way intended to say that any controversy surrounding this is any way relevant to ruling of germaneness. I restricted my comments to say that this accomplishes a different purpose.
Having listened to advice from both sides, I rule that the amendment is germane. Discussion on the amendment. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, for those of you that may not have pulled up this amendment, it's very short. It basically adds food served at a chili or soup cook-off conducted by a community-based nonprofit organization, provided there's no fee charge for the event, food preparation volunteers are trained in food safety courses on safe food handling practices, and food is served in a cup or bowl on which the following disclaimer is printed. Contents were prepared by volunteers trained in food safety, but consumers assume the risk of foodborne illnesses as a result of the consumption. Honestly, I wish we didn't even have to have this, that the Department of Health would recognize common sense and allow some of these things to move forward. I first came into contact with this issue in the Brainerd Lakes area, not Cross Lake, but Brainerd. The United Way held this event to help promote the area, raise funds, and all the businesses were getting together and showing their chili recipes to the world. And it was a fantastic event. People came out throughout the area. The businesses got to show off what they were doing, and suddenly the Department of Health says that we need to get engaged in this and basically shut it down. They wanted people to cook their meat, each one of the individual booths, cook all your meat in the mall, which was impossible. People couldn't all bring down their ovens or their stoves or their cookware and do it. They were simply gathering together as a community to, it built community awareness, community coming together, community support for organizations like the United Way. And so we've been trying to work with them, but Senator Kerry Reid brought this forward because they are not willing to move forward with this. So this is a common sense, small amendment that simply allows these types of things to happen in your community. And we've corrected some issues in the past with small churches trying to have cooked food in their potlucks so that they could raise funds for people. This is another one of those that has a small adjustment to instruct them that this thing is okay, this common sense direction, it makes sense. Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Madam Chair, if I get a roll call vote as well.
Roll call requested. Roll call granted. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President and members. And I just got a copy of the amendment. I don't think this language is needed. And I'll speak directly to a community event that occurred in the city of Park Rapids this last summer. It was a chili cook-off that occurred at the VFW. We got a letter from the department that as long as the chili was prepared at home, it would comply with the rules that they had. And so I think that this language isn't needed, and being that it isn't needed, I would urge you to not support it.
Senator Rood.
Madam Chair, I believe the rules now say that it is not okay to do this in your homes, and that's the whole purpose of this. It says that you have to prepare it on site. Well, we have the veterinarian participating in this, and so they're going to cook their chili at the veterinarian's office, or we have the beauty salon, and they're going to put their chili at the beauty salon or the dog groomers. I think we're much better off having this language so that they can prepare in a safe and sanitary manner. And that's what we're trying to accomplish. We all want food safety. And I believe that this goes down the road to that food safety for consumers and our businesses.
Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Madam President. To speak to the merits of the amendment, then, I may or may not support this amendment if it had come through the committee process. Well, I do think that these types of events are important in our communities. I've been to several myself, but I will take note that, again, we had a broad group of stakeholders work very hard at trying to come up with a definition of farmers markets that can work and that can allow our farmers to build these new markets that allow them to sell the goods and services that they work on their farms. And this here would bring some unneeded concern from the Department of Ag and the Department of Health, and puts the bill that we've worked very hard to find peace in the valley at risk. And I would hope that members would just recognize that and vote against the A4 amendment in order to allow this important work that the Minnesota Farmers Market Association, MDA, MDH, the City of Minneapolis, Farmers Union, all these folks have gotten together and worked very hard to have a bill here that can allow farmers markets to work productively in Minnesota this spring as we roll forward. And this jeopardizes that good work. So I would encourage members to vote against the A4 amendment for that purpose. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion on the A4 amendment? Senator Westrom.
Madam President, I would just like to urge the members of the body to vote in support of this amendment. We heard from Senator Scoy that he doesn't believe we need this because this is already allowed. Well, that's a good reason to support the amendment. If it's not allowed, it's covered. We'll take care of it. He inferred, I assume he believes this is a good amendment if it's already allowed, and that's a reason he doesn't think we need to put it in. And so if we find that out after we pass it, of course we can change that. But I would caution us to not to vote this down if we want this type of revision to our communities and allow them to do this. As I read the amendment, I would ask a question of the author if she would yield.
Will Senator Rood yield? She will yield. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, to the author of the amendment, Senator Rood, the way I'm understanding this amendment is it actually is only related to nonprofits in the community. I have, for example, electrical co-ops that put on an annual event. Used to be a pork chop feed until the Department of Health got involved and disallowed them from doing that, even though they served it through the school and or at the school facilities and clean facilities. But it doesn't look to me like organizations like that that put on an annual dinner or breakfast or a meal for their customers would qualify under this amendment. Or can you clarify that for me?
Senator Rood.
Madam Chair, I think we wanted this very narrowly defined, and so the amendment does say conducted by a community-based nonprofit organization where there's no fee. We're really specifically trying to get at these little community events that bring that are the heart of our tourism industry in greater Minnesota. So it's a very narrowly crafted bill just to help greater Minnesota and help you all come and visit.
So. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, Senator Rood, thank you for that clarification. It confirms that maybe this is quite narrow, which should give members even more comfort if they're skeptical about this. But members, especially in rural Minnesota, think about this, because I hear periodically of a different organization that's trying to do a customer appreciation or put on a free supper or some event that is bringing in a group that they know or a community, and it's not even just nonprofit. And so I would urge us to even consider allowing other groups that try to engage in this a very friendly civic engagement that we should rather foster in this state rather than try to thwart. And the Department of Health has come in, as I've explained, a few years ago. We had an electrical co-op association shut down from serving pork chops and their meal at a school in our area that they had done for years and years prior, and all of a sudden they had to shut the thing down because the Department of Health wasn't allowing them to do this. It was a free meal. And so, members, this is an issue that does need to be addressed. There's no better way to kill community spirit than to kill the opportunity for volunteers and to over-regulate them. We aren't talking dangerous situations here. We're talking people volunteering, bringing home-cooked meals together, much like a potluck, or using facilities, in the case I'm talking about, a school cafeteria that serves kids all week, and they shut it down because they didn't have the right permits and licenses and regulatory oversight. And so, members, this is a common sense, a very narrow provision that the author of the amendment just explained. I would urge your support to show those community support groups that we believe common sense should prevail and we should promote community spirit. I would urge your support of this amendment.
Any more discussion on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, the secretary will take the roll on the A4 amendment. All members having voted that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 48 ayes and 16 nays, the amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Is there any more discussion on Senate File 2060? Seeing none, the secretary will give Senate File 2060 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2060, a bill for an act relating to food safety, providing a definition of farmer's market, permitting food product sampling and demonstration in certain circumstances.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, The secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 16 on general orders, Senate File 2076, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Senate File 2076 is a bill that was brought to me from Dakota County. It allows Dakota County to change the way it operates under state law from a county administrator to change to a county manager form of government. The county's asking for this change as a result of some operational studies it made over the course of 4 years. And that study identified several steps the county could take to improve and reduce cost of operations within the county. Currently, state law requires every county to appoint a number of advisory committees. Under the county manager plan, the county would be able to appoint advisory committees it needs most. Members, I should note that there hasn't been any opposition to the bill raised in the committees that it went through. Our former colleague, former senator, and now county commissioner Chris Gerlach came to testify in support of the bill. I stand for any questions and ask for your support.
Are there any questions? Are there any amendments? Senator Dames.
Would Senator Sieben yield, please?
Senator Sieben will yield. Senator Dames.
Senator Sieben, could you tell me, as I understand, this could be accomplished two ways. It can be done legislatively or it can be done through a referendum. Could you tell me, has Dakota County done a referendum or held a referendum on this?
Senator Sieben.
Senator, thank you, Madam President, and Senator Dames, they have not. The bill allows the county board to make this change by resolution. And I'd point out that this is not a unique situation. The legislature has already passed several bills that allow Dakota County to appoint their row officers, such as treasurer and auditor, by resolution. So this bill would, as I said, allow Dakota County to use the same process for making a change in its plan of operations. Again, other counties already operate under this proposed change, and so this would change, again, Dakota County from a county administrator to a county manager form of government.
Senator Dames.
Follow-up, Madam President. Senator Sieben, I understand you're saying they can do it with a resolution. I understand they can do it with a resolution, but it's also my understanding that we have to pass it at the legislature allowing them to do that. That's what prompted my question as far as a referendum. And if they've not done a referendum, I'm wondering why they have not done a referendum and let their constituents get involved in the decision versus coming to the legislature and asking us to make that decision. Would you please respond?
Senator Sieben.
Madam President and Senator Dames, the county board decided that they supported this legislation. They came to the Dakota County legislators, which is a bipartisan group of legislators in the House and Senate, and asked for this proposed change, and that's what the bill before us is proposing to do. But you are right, you are correct, this would allow the board to make this change by resolution and not by referendum.
Thank you, Madam President.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Sharon.
Thank you, and I appreciate the discussion about whether or not to use referendum or to come in front of the legislature. You know, if you pay attention to what this change allows the county to do in relationship to its organizational structure, it allows some flexibility to act in a more efficient and flexible county manager plan. It can term limit changes to the Planning Commission members. It could assist the county in retaining qualified citizens on their boards. There's a number of administrative kind of activities. So I think a local board, I've served on a local government, the notion of taking something to a referendum is an expensive process. That's an election process. So I think that they have to determine the decision-making whether or not the change, if it can be done legislatively, would not require them to go through a lengthy or an expensive referendum process when the elected officials have studied it and determined that this is an appropriate course in order for them to efficiently carry out their functions.
Senator Westrom.
Madam Chair, would the author yield?
Senator Sieben will Madam yield. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, Senator Sieben, you mentioned in your explanation that this would allow him to appoint some positions. Can you expand on that and clarify what positions would now they be able to appoint?
Senator Sieben.
Madam President and Senator Westrom, for example, right now the Dakota County Library Board operates the library, the county library budget, approves it on their own, and the Dakota County Board of Commissioners doesn't ultimately approve that library budget. So under this new system of a county manager form of government, the library board would be appointed by the county. The library board would make recommendations to the county board for the library budget, and then the county board would approve that budget. So in that regard, I think that this proposed change is more accountable to taxpayers, because the elected representatives of the county board are ultimately making the decisions that impact taxpayers. I should also note that this is not being sort of jammed through at the county board level. It's my understanding that the individual advisory groups that, for instance, the library board in Dakota County, they support this change in governance structure.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, if she'd continue to yield.
Senator Sieben will yield. Senator Westrom.
Senator Sieben, is that the only change to appointments? And you mentioned going from a city or a county administrator to a county manager. Can you explain to us a little bit more of why they want to change to that, and why it requires an act of the legislature to do this instead of them taking care of it themselves?
Senator Sieben.
Madam President, again, this is the result of Dakota County brought forward a plan over 4 years ago to look for a process that that would improve and reduce its cost of operations and make their system of government more accountable to taxpayers of Dakota County. And there are several examples. I just talked about the library board. Another example where this would allow the county to more accurately reflect the needs of the county are there are different county board advisory groups that are very prescriptive in the types of constituents that need to be appointed to these boards. This would give the county board more flexibility to allow that the elected representatives, whom are the county commissioners, to ensure that they are more responsive to the needs of Dakota County. Senator Westrom, I'm just trying to remember your other question. The change to why from a county administrator to a county manager form. Again, it's just so that the way it was presented to me and to the other Dakota County legislators is that they believe that this would be a more responsive style of government. So under community corrections, the extension service, the library board, and others, the county will be able to appoint the advisory committees that it most needs, and then give those recommendations to the county board, whom are the elected representatives who are serving the people of Dakota County.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, thank you. Senator Sieben. Members, I think Senator Dames probably hit the key point. Why would the legislature decide to bypass the local county voters when they could do this by referendum? And it ought to give us pause when the local county commissioners are trying to bypass the voters. If it's such a good deal, it wouldn't take much to pass it on a referendum if it's going to make it efficient. Which I think that's a buzzword, but I would bring concern that Maybe there's some downside to this, and if there is, then the voters should know about it. If there isn't, it will pass easy enough. And so I don't feel comfortable acting as a state legislature, letting the county bypass the local citizens and the voters. And so I would urge you to vote no on this. There is a remedy in statute already for the county. If they want to do this, they can go to referendum next general election or at another time. General election would be the cheapest time for them to do that. And I don't know if they've had lobbyists up here paying them to do this, but if they have, that certainly hasn't come without a price tag either. And they could go to a referendum. And that's the process that lets the voters be most engaged and most responsive to how they want their local unit of government to operate. And so I think we should leave it and let the voters have a say in this before we just take that authority away. So I would urge a no vote.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Sieben yield?
Senator Sieben will yield. Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Sieben, in the interest of perhaps peace in the valley on this particular issue, and I understand what Senator Westrum had to say, there's many times where we'll have reverse referendums attached to certain bills. Would you be adverse to perhaps taking your bill and having a reverse referendum, say, within the next 3 months if a petition was signed with a certain number of persons within the county that would trigger a referendum? Otherwise, the provisions would be authorized and you could move forward. Is that something that maybe would bring peace to the valley?
Senator Sieben.
Madam President, Senator Osmick, I don't know if you're proposing an amendment right now. I would not support that. Like I said, the county board brought this legislation to the Dakota County legislators asking for their support for it. They feel like this style of government, this form of government, would be more responsive to the needs of Dakota County residents. And as I said, the Dakota County board brought this forward in a bipartisan manner. I guess they're nonpartisan commissioners, but they feel that this would be a more responsive system of government to adopt. It would streamline the advisory committee process so that the county board again would have, they're the elected representatives. So instead of, for example, as I mentioned before, the library board being able to set their own budget as non-elected officials on the library board, the library board would now be advisory to the Board of Commissioners, which, in my opinion, and the Dakota County Commissioner's opinion, is more responsive to the residents of Dakota County because they are the elected officials.
Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam President. I'll take that as a no. I guess I would say, Senator Sieben, by just putting it, if this is such a popular idea and we're taking away the voice of the voters here in the process, we're taking away, just as we took away the rights of voters to vote on referendums for, let's say, the Twin Stadium in this body once upon a time, I have a big problem taking away the rights of the voters to express their will at the ballot box. However, if this is such a popular idea, a simple reverse referendum that within 60 days if a petition was brought forward with a 5% of the population saying we don't like this would trigger a referendum. If it's so popular, probably you won't get any kind of a petition. So I would recommend, I'd like to see an amendment on here, but I'd like to have your support in going in that direction, Senator Sieben, that if this is something that's so wildly popular, something as modest as this would still ensure that the voters still have their rights.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam President, members. I think that what really this boils down to is that we want Dakota County to be able to govern itself the way it chooses to be governed. And yes, we could go to a referendum, but as Senator Sharon correctly pointed out, there's cost associated with that. We hear many times from local governments that that their budgets are constrained. And from my perspective, as someone who does like accountability, in other words, people who are elected spending the taxpayers' money. This actually accomplishes that with the library board, et cetera, as has been pointed out. So I don't think this is a reduction in accountability. I think it, in fact, if anything, increases accountability. And I don't think it makes sense to force Dakota County to incur the cost to go to a referendum to get this done. So I would urge members to vote yes.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 2076 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2076, a bill for an act relating to Dakota County, authorizing adoption of local county government plan.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 50 ayes and 16 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 148 on general orders, Senate File 2245, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. On July 7th, 2012, Tony Kane, the little boy, playing a in a beach on the water in Minneapolis, Worth Lake, drowned. And although there were lifeguards on duty, it was discovered by his family and others that current law did not set any standards for lifeguards to be certified in those situations at public beaches. Although there were standards in the law and in Minnesota rules with regard to public pools, that is, pools that were owned and operated by local governments. Senate File 2245 is a response to that situation and proposes that if indeed a political subdivision, and it's not required to do so, but if it does provide lifeguards to be present at a public swimming beach, that each of those individuals needs to be certified either by American Cross certification or by any of the other groups that are part of the United States Lifeguard Standard Coalition, which includes the United States Life Saving Association and the YMCA of the USA, that they have to have that level of certification. That is the equivalent then of what is required for local governments that provide lifeguards at public pools. So the section of the law to honor Tony Kane's memory is called Tony Kane's Law, It's just one step further in making sure that parents and families have a level of expectation when they and their families go to a public beach and lifeguards aren't provided. I know of no opposition, and I would request your support.
Are there any amendments? Senator Hamm.
Madam President, I don't have an amendment, but I have a question.
Okay. State your question.
And Senator Rest, what are the requirements that Minneapolis or other local jurisdictions currently have for someone to be a lifeguard? I'm not familiar with this area of the law. My understanding was that all the cities and local authorities that had public beaches, they all had requirements that people had to conform to become a lifeguard. And what is that? Minneapolis is being mentioned here as, where this young man was from. And do you know what requirements Minneapolis has for people to be lifeguards, and do they conform with this law as it is, and do other cities don't do that? I guess I'm just not sure on what the current status is.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Hahn. The city of Minneapolis has a requirement with regard to if they provide lifeguards at public pools to people that are hired by them. There's the description for the lifeguards for summer 2014 does indeed require current American Cross lifeguard first aid CPR AED certification. In the Three Rivers seasonal lifeguard requirements also requires minimum age, but also Red Cross for the professional rescuer lifeguard or American Heart Association basic life support. And they mirror for their lifeguards the same the same language that is in the Minnesota rules with regard to that, in that it says they must hold Red Cross lifeguard or equivalent certification. So local governments have discretion over what programs they require for the certification. Doesn't have to be the American Red Cross, but state law would require equivalent for pools, and we're putting that language in for public beaches as well. And as a matter of fact, the city of St. Paul uses a private entity that indeed is the equivalent. So there's a lot of local discretion as long as the American Red Cross, which I think most people consider to be kind of the gold standard, that as long as it meets that equivalent, then they may choose a whatever program they wish. So it's totally with the discretion of the local government, as long as the standards are reached. And we chose the same language for this bill that to mirror what is required for public pools. Once again, if a local government chooses to provide lifeguards at a public at a public beach. I hope that's responsive.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Senchum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Pardon me, Madam President. Senator Rest, I respect totally what you're trying to accomplish here, but I also respect local governments. And whether it's Wadena, Windham, Worthington or Winona, maybe even Waseca, it just seems to me that local governments and park boards collectively can decide on the qualifications of their local lifeguards. And we always talk about unfunded mandates, and albeit this is a small one, I think this is just one more signal to local government that we're trying to control you. And I have full confidence that local government people have the capability to decide these kind of issues.
Madam President.
Senator Rest.
Madam President, Senator Stenjum, thank you for your comments, but this is in no way a challenge to local governments. First of all, if they have a public beach, they're not required to have lifeguards at all. They don't have to. If I was with my family at a public beach, no matter where it was, that was owned by a local government, I'd hope they would, but they're not required to. Same thing with regard to what kind of standards. The American Red Cross is set, and I think is acknowledged as a gold standard, but the local government can choose an equivalent program, and in fact they do. The city of St. Paul does. The Three Rivers talks about an equivalent. You can get the training that you want, but certainly the local governments don't have to provide it, but if they do, I think all of us want them to have lifeguards that meet the equivalent of the American Red Cross standard. Or its equivalent, once again, or its equivalent. I think it's very very clear, and I didn't have any local government that operates a public beach testify in opposition that this was an unfunded mandate. If they have a lifeguard, they should meet certain qualifications. They can do it through any number of programs.
Is there any more discussion or any amendments on Senate Bill 2245? Senator Westrom.
Madam President, would the author yield?
The author will yield. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, to the author, Senator Rest, can you explain a little more about the certification process? You talk about the Red Cross standard as being the gold standard. What does that entail? And I'll ask the follow-up question. You can maybe cover them both in the same question or answer. How widespread are these courses? My communities of Wheaton and Graceville on the far western edge of the state, how easy are they going to have access to these training courses? Where's the closest one offered to rural Minnesota, if you could include that in your response?
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Senator Westrom, for that question. The United States Lifeguard Standards Coalition started meeting in 2003. It was a collaborative effort of the American Red Cross, the United States Life Saving Association, and the YMCA of the USA. America's nonprofit leaders in lifeguard standard setting and the members of the International Life Saving Federation were involved in that effort. Since that time, in the last 10 years, their mission to research, identify, and promote evidence-based standards for lifeguarding and water rescue have gone forward. I don't know, I'm not a lifeguard, I've never was trained as a lifeguard or a water safety instructor or whatever, but these organizations have been meeting and working on making sure that the highest standards for lifeguard training are available in programs that are either offered by private entities, like in St. Paul, they contract with a private entity. I don't know about your individual community, and I certainly would welcome information from them if they have a lake, a public beach where they hire a lifeguard. But the outcome of the process, which they released their report in 2011, was indeed an evidence-based standards for the most effective lifeguarding and water rescue skills. So I think all of those groups operating together have produced the standards and the instructions for lifeguards across the country, quite frankly. And I think that their programs that, as far as I know, are fairly widely available, would be available to lifeguards in training in your cities. Keeping in mind, once again, that if a city owns and operates a public beach, they don't have to provide lifeguards at all. Certainly, we would hope they would, and that they would be trained. But if you want me to give you the details of lifeguard training, I certainly cannot do that.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, Senator Rest, if you would yield for another question.
Senator Rest will yield. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, Senator Rest, do you have any idea if it's the course we're talking? Is it a two-week course? Is it a month-long course? A six-month-long course? I'm just trying to get an idea of the rigor. And ultimately, some of our rural areas are not very populated, and I'm just trying to figure out for my communities that might own or operate a public beach what kind of issues they're going to have with finding somebody that's certified to meet this certification, albeit maybe they're qualified in other certifications or other experiences. But if this training is how long is it, if you could tell us how long of a period are we talking that this training takes?
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Westrom, for that question. In general, the average training for lifeguards, according to the American Red Cross certification process, is about 25 hours.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, thank you, Senator Rest, for that information. That's helpful. This is one of those issues. You can see the balance on both sides, Senator Rest. The issue to have qualified people skilled at lifeguarding. The flip side, I raise concern about our communities. And if you have any more information, Senator Rest, about how widely available these training courses are. I know we've got different training courses, but I don't know offhand as we stand here on the floor whether those courses in some of our communities actually meet this standard, or if there are other courses that they've followed, and they might be similar, but maybe they don't quite meet this, and I just don't know the answer to that. So I wish I had more comfort on that, because if it's in our area, if you have to send somebody 45 or 60 or 150 miles to get training, that just means there's less and less people to be lifeguards. And my concern also would be that maybe we create a reverse incentive. And from a legal standpoint, when a municipality is contemplating whether they hire a lifeguard or not, if they can't find local options or local qualified people, they're going to have the incentive to just not lifeguard that public beach, and I don't think that's what we want to do either. And so that is my concern with this bill, Senator Rest, when we do make this as an unfunded mandate on our communities, albeit an issue that's very notable, but we have many, many miles between bigger towns in our area, and so I speak from that rural perspective. St. Paul, I'm sure, has several close opportunities for this certification, but I'm not aware of how widespread it is in rural Minnesota. If you have any further insight on that, I'd welcome that before we vote on this bill.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. Once again, most people who sign up for water safety or lifeguard instruction, that's not paid for by a local government. The individual who's applying for the job takes that expense on for themselves. Also, the for example, in St. Paul, the individual also must be 18 years of age. If they do not use St. Paul's program, they need to present a certificate to St. Paul that they are indeed have equivalent training. It is not an unfunded mandate on any local government. A local government doesn't have to provide lifeguards at all at their public beaches. Some of them, as a matter of fact, will put up a sign just like they do in some hotel pools, which are not pools operated by local governments, and say, no lifeguard on duty, swim at your own risk, or please, every child needs to have adults with them, and so forth. This is not an unfunded mandate. It is simply common sense that reflects the same provisions for local governments right now that supervise and own public pools. They are already required to have the their lifeguards that they hire have American Red Cross certification or its equivalent. All the bill does is saying if they own and operate a public beach, their lifeguards must meet similar standards if they choose to have them. So there are a number of choice points for local governments that takes away the whole notion that this is an unfunded mandate. Anybody applying for the job needs to get their own certification. We know that's the case across the state. Somebody wants to pay for it, fine, but otherwise, if you're applying for the job, you have to come with your own certification. The next choice point is a local government. If it owns a pool, it's already required to provide that kind of certification or required to ask for that kind of certification for its lifeguards to assure that parents have a level of confidence when their kids go swimming in a pool that the lifeguard will be able to take care of them if they get into trouble. And if they do operate a public beach, that they are going to, families are going to have some assurance in every town across this state. If they do that, and that's a choice point, not a mandate, if they do that, that they, parents, families have the same level of assurance that a lifeguard that is hired by the local government, if it chooses to do so, not a mandate, would be trained at the same level.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a couple thoughts on this. Let me start with, will Senator Rest yield to a question?
Senator Rest will yield. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam President, and Senator Rest, is what you're saying when you use the standard of the American Red Cross, first off, that the United States lifeguard standards are actually what you're talking about, or is it the standard only that the American Red Cross has?
Senator Rest.
thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Hall, for the question. The United States Lifeguard Standards Coalition, as I mentioned before, is a collaborative effort of the American Red Cross, the United States Life Saving Association, and the YMCA of the USA. Those programs, I regard, from all the research we've done, are equivalent to one another. We chose in this bill to say the American Red Cross are its equivalent. We could have chosen to say the United States Life Saving Association standards or the YMCA of USA standards or its equivalent, but because in the rules and in the statute with regard to local governments that own and operate pools, the language that is used there is the American Red Cross or its equivalent. So we could list all of them that we know about And next year, something comes up, and there's another organization that is also the equivalent, but they're not able to be part of this, part of the training, because they're not part of the list. So the American Red Cross is chosen as one, and then the equivalents of which, and I think in committee, Senator Hall, you had mentioned the YMCA of the USA. It is certainly regarded by the United States Lifeguard Standards Coalition as an equivalent program.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Rest. I appreciate that. You know my concerns with labeling one organization as a standard versus a coalition of organizations, and I would much rather had United States Lifeguard Standards as the standard, although in my background I've taken that the American Red Cross, which did a great job, and also the YMCA, which did a fabulous job also. Members, one of the aspects that I heard in a discussion earlier on this was that it's better to have someone, even if they're untrained, to be a lifeguard than no one at all. And I would like to speak to that for a moment. I think it's real important that we do have, if you're going to have a lifeguard, you're going to have someone trained and trained well. And the reason for that is so many people that are untrained that try to rescue someone, now granted anybody, should be rescuing it to a point, but if they go out swim after someone, we have a lot of double drownings because of that. So the training is really important for lifeguards. So it may close down, hopefully not close down beaches, but it may come to a point where either you have a qualified lifeguard or you have none at all. And I'd rather, in one sense, have none at all than to have someone out there that's halfway trained or just has a few hours. Senator Westrom, I think, had a good point. Out in the rural areas, it's going to be tough to train. And again, the local municipalities may not be doing the training, but you're talking about 12 sessions, and for somebody in the rural area, that's 12 different times, typically, to do a two-hour session getting up your certificate. So although I'm going to vote for this, again, I wish it had a different standard, not that the American Red Cross is a bad standard by any means, but a coalition, I think, is a better app way of doing it. Thank you.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam President. I appreciate the debate on this important issue today. I rise in support of Senator Rest's bill. Many of us in the chamber have young children or grandchildren, and I think we owe it to the kids that if we are at a public beach, just as if we are at a pool, and there is a lifeguard in the stand, we should expect those lifeguards to be properly trained in the event of a tragedy or something bad happening. So, again, I rise in support of Senator Rest's bill and appreciate her for bringing this forward.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 2245 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2245, a bill for an act relating to public beaches, requiring lifeguards at public beaches to have certain minimum training.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, The secretary will close the roll. There being 52 ayes and 14 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The last bill on special orders is number 40 on general orders, Senate File 2569. Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Madam President. Yes, I'm arise to speak in support of Senate File 2569, which is the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency Uncession Bill. This bill is the purpose is to repeal obsolete, redundant, and unnecessary laws and rules under the direction of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Article 1 puts a sunset date for a report on a program that is no longer dispersing funds. So they set the sunset date at the year 2020 in order to give time for some additional tracking of the loans that are dispersed. But since it is no longer funded, it did not seem appropriate to continue it on forever. Article 2 repeals a local bond issue report. Local governments are already required to hold public hearings about local bond issues, and so this report is really duplicative. Article 3 repeals statutes and rules having to do with programs that are no longer being funded. These programs are all the activities are still being carried out, but the programs themselves are no longer funded, and they have been consolidated into what's called the Challenge Program. So this section simply repeals the laws and then the rules relating to those programs that aren't no longer needed. Also in Article 3, there's a repeal of a rent assistance for family stabilization program. This program was established in 1991 as a demonstration project, and all of the families that were participating in this program have now been incorporated into the Housing Trust Fund program. So this language is no longer needed as well. Article 4, it makes conforming changes relating to the local bond issue report in Article 2. And Article 5, the finance agency is required to print data in the Minnesota Register relating to the distribution of low-income housing tax credits. And the agency would like to put a link in the Minnesota Register stating that the information is available electronically and then stating where the information is available. This bill has been non-controversial, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Is there any discussion on Senate File 2569? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A1 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Senjum moves to amend Senate File number 2569 as follows, page 3 after line 24, insert. And this is the A1 amendment.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, members, this amendment deals with, guess what, residential sprinklers. And we've been there before, Madam President, and we're here again. Some of you may be aware within the chamber that last October, the Department of Labor and Industry implemented a sprinkler requirement for houses over 4,500 square feet. And so the nose is under the door, so to speak. I think we've talked about this a lot over the course of the last couple of years. Actually, this chamber has voted on it a couple of times and overwhelmingly voted in opposition to residential sprinkler requirements. We all know about the cost that will be imposed if
Madam President,
this goes forward. Yes.
Senator Steven, for what purpose does the gentlewoman rise?
On germaneness, Madam President.
The question is on germaneness advice.
Madam President, under Rule 335.1, I would rule 35.2 Subdivision 1. I would request that, Madam President, you rule this amendment not germane because it relates to a substantially different subject. And under 35.2 Subdivision 2, it's intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose. than that of the original bill to which it is proposed. Senator Wicklund's bill has a much more narrow scope, and Senator Senjum's sprinkler amendment has a substantially different purpose and would accomplish a much different result.
More advice, Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam President. I would simply say, and I'll simply read it, essentially the first sentence of this bill says, a bill for an act related to housing. This is all about housing. And I would plea my case.
Senator Hand, more advice?
Thank you, Madam President. I agree with Senator Senjum. I think this is pertinent to the general topic of the bill, but more importantly, this is an important issue. And if members don't choose to adopt this amendment, they can vote no. But I would just ask that the President give the body an opportunity to weigh in on this important issue. It's something that needs to be addressed, and this is a bill that certainly is in within the scope of what the amendment falls into. Let's have the vote. Let's just have the vote.
More advice. Senator Wicklund.
Madam President, I would like to state that I do not think that the amendment is germane. This bill has to do with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and rules and regulations. I do not think that the home indoor sprinkler system, the mandate, is closely enough related to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to be germane.
More advice, Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam President. And I would simply say the Minnesota Housing Financing Agency finances houses that will or will not be built with sprinklers. So it seems to me that this is right within the appropriate domain of discussion.
Having considered the advice from both sides of the issue, I rule that the amendment is not germane. Is there any more discussion? Are there any more amendments? The Secretary will give Senate File 2569 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2569, a bill for an act relating to housing, repealing obsolete, redundant, and unnecessary laws and rules under the direction of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 66 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. We've completed the special orders for the day. We're on announcements of Senate interest. Are there any announcements? Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam President. I actually have two announcements. The first one, members, on your desk is sort of round two from the legislative auditor. We all submitted, or many of us submitted, topic suggestions. A legislative audit subcommission or subcommittee on the topics met, narrowed that down to a list of 12 that you have on your desk. I would strongly encourage you to take a look at that and vote for up to 4. And you can return that to Jim Nobles, or you can return it to me, or just drop it by my office, and we'll collect those and get those in to the auditor. And Madam President, if I can, second announcement is Senator Miller and I would like to invite you to a gathering of the Purple Caucus that will take place on Thursday at 5:30 in the pub location over at the Embassy Suites. We'll have something on your desks about it tomorrow, but just wanted to get it on your radar today. Thank you.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, the Energy and Environment Committee will meet at 1 o'clock for the confirmations we're considering.
Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senator Latz all day, Senator Westrum from 11 to 11:20 a.m., Senators Ingebrigtsen and Rosen from 11:25 to 12 noon. Are there any other announcements? Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam President. Education will meet at 1 o'clock. Education policy.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to wish Senator Alice Johnson a very happy birthday. If she had her wish, it would be that every school child in Minnesota not go to school hungry. As she works on that wish, she wants to make sure you're not hungry. There's delicious chocolate cake in her office.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President and members, just so members of the Finance Committee have some sense of what our schedule looks like as we try to assemble the supplemental finance bill. We'll have a brief meeting tomorrow, I'm not sure what time, for some very simple bills that shouldn't last a long time. We'll begin meeting on the supplemental finance bill Thursday morning, then depending on floor session on Thursday, we'll meet after floor session into the evening. Friday, I think what we'll do is meet for several hours before floor session. Well, I'm not sure what where floor session is, Senator Bach. So we'll, if finance members can just be on the outlook for the timing on Friday, so we won't conflict with session, whatever that is. So we'll meet either after session into the evening Friday or maybe start Friday morning. And if we don't finish, we'll be meeting Saturday until we do finish. So just members of the Finance Committee have a sense of what our plan is.
Are there any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, we will be meeting Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week, not on Saturday. The times are going to be slightly fluid. We're going to try and accommodate the Finance Committee. I think everyone's aware the Senate rules don't allow a full committee to meet while the Senate is in session. So, Madam President, with that, I move the Senate to now adjourn until Wednesday, April 2nd, 11 a.m.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.